Hello, my name's Dave Emery. This is For the Record Program 197, and we're going to take a look at fascist historical revisionism throughout the world. We're going to take a look at it in the Middle East, we're going to take a look at it in Asia, and we're going to take a look at it right here in the United States as well. We're going to begin by taking a look at an op-ed column from the Los Angeles Times of Thursday, February 3rd of the year 2000, in which the writer, who is Yossi Klein Halevi, a senior writer for the Jerusalem Report, discusses an article, an article in the official Syrian publication Tishreen, spelled T-I-S-H-R-E-E-N. This is an article in which the Syrian government, speaking through Tishreen, officially denies the Holocaust. Again, from the L.A. Times of Thursday, February 3rd of the year 2000, the L.A. Times entitled this op-ed column, "An Insane Gamble Turns Into a National Disgrace," subtitled "Peace Process, Israel's Barak Keeps Silent on Syria's Denial of the Holocaust" at State Line Jerusalem, and reads in part as follows, skipping down. On Monday, Syria became the world's first Holocaust denier state. An editorial in the official Damascus newspaper Tishreen, the leading mouthpiece of Syrian dictator Hafez Assad, proclaimed that Zionists, quote, "created the Holocaust myth to blackmail the world and terrorize its intellectuals and politicians," unquote. The editorial, written by Tishreen's editor Mohammed Kair Al-Wadi, A-L-W-A-D-I, labeled Israel, quote, "the plague of the third millennium," unquote, and added that what Israel is doing today against the Arab states is worse than the Nazi system, unquote. The logic is classic totalitarian. Israel's crimes outdo the Holocaust, which never actually happened. I've noted in numerous programs strong links between various aspects, various Middle Eastern nationalist movements and the Third Reich, ranging from the pro-Third Reich uprising in Iraq during the Second World War to the machinations of Haj Amin al-Husseini, the self-proclaimed Grand Mufti of Jerusalem and the first leader of the Palestinian National Movement. He was a key Third Reich spy and actually a major in the SS. We've also talked about the post-World War II Galen mission to the Middle East, in which Otto Skorzeny, the SS colonel and Odessa leader, was instrumental in putting together the Egyptian and later the Libyan secret service. That discussed in RFA program number 3. The recent landmark book, The Beast Reawakens by Martin A. Lee, goes into these descriptions, connections at considerable length. I would note that the last known residence of Alois Brunner, a key aide to Adolf Eichmann in the liquidation of European Jewry, again the Holocaust that Syria now says never actually happened, He was last definitively pinpointed in Syria, where he was appointed as the head of the BND Damascus desk. BND is the German intelligence service at the time, and he was using a cover in order to operate the BND Damascus desk, the Damascus desk for the BND. He is reported to be the highest-ranking Nazi war criminal still at large and still alive. In the Tishreen editorial that was just alluded to in that op-ed column from the L.A. Times of 2000, the writer actually accessed one of the leading Holocaust revisionists, a fellow named David Irving, whom we discussed in RFA program number, For the Record segment number 189. David Irving is currently the focal point of a libel trial in the United Kingdom, in which he is suing, among others, historian Deborah Lipstadt, who called him basically a liar and a Holocaust denier. It remains to be seen what exactly happens with that particular libel suit, but it's interesting that the Tishreen editorial actually accessed the work of David Irving. They sourced David Irving. Turning now to the New York Times of Tuesday, February 8th of the year 2000, this is an op-ed column by Thomas L. Friedman. It's headlined, "Liar's Poker, Intercontinental Style." It's subtitled "Syria and Austria Winking at the Past." The Austria is a reference to, of course, Jörg Haider in Austria, about whom we've spoken many, many times. He's the focal point of a three-part For the Record series, For the Record programs, program number one, number 28. Again, this column by Thomas Friedman of Tuesday, February 8th of the year 2000, "Liar's Poker, Intercontinental Style." "The Big Lie had a big week last week. In Austria, Jörg Haider, who has expressed sympathy for Hitler's full employment policies, defended the Waffen-SS and referred to Nazi concentration camps as punishment camps," unquote, saw his extremist Freedom Party sworn into power after a strong finish in recent elections. And in Syria, the leading state newspaper, Tishrin, published an editorial that asked, quote, "Why does Israel insist on bringing up this alleged Holocaust policy?" Unquote. It's just to get money and to reinforce the myth of the Holocaust in the face of credible voices questioning it, including that of the controversial British historian David Irving. Unquote. So note that the Holocaust revisionist David Irving is actually referenced by the Tishrin editorial. Holocaust revisionism and historical revisionism in general is obviously gaining steam worldwide. It's gaining steam in Japan as well. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience who got this from the New York Times of January 23rd of the year 2000. It's Dateline Tokyo, January 22nd, and it's an article by Howard W. French headlined, "Japanese Call 37 Massacre a War Myth, Stirring Storm." The article reads in part as follows. A conference intended to play down Japan's record of atrocities during its occupation of China has unleashed a storm of criticism from Beijing and drawn strong condemnation from some historians and others in Japan. The topic of the one-day conference, scheduled for Sunday in Japan's second-largest city, Osaka, is the 1937 Nanking Massacre, which organizers have provocatively called, quote, "the biggest myth of the 20th century," unquote. The site selected for the meeting further stoked the ire of many in Japan. The conference will be in the city's International Peace Center, which houses permanent exhibits on war, including the American atomic bombing of Japan in World War II and Japan's brutal military campaign in China in the 1930s. For several days running, the Chinese government and news media have bitterly attacked the conference as the work of people eager to falsify history and raise tensions between the two countries. So note that denying slaughter is gaining steam in Japan as well. I would note that the Rape of Nanking, as it is called, involved the slaughter of more people than died in both atomic bombings put together. These people, over the course of a week, were shot, beheaded, bayoneted, etc., a much more brutal way of dying than most of the atomic bomb victims, at least the ones who went in the initial flash. It's not to say that they didn't die a brutal death, but more were done to death mano a mano, so to speak, in the Rape of Nanking than died in both atomic bombings put together. Historical revisionism is in vogue elsewhere in the world as well, and including here in the United States. A number of Ku Klux Klan-related elements have been reinventing themselves, so to speak, including a fellow whom we've spoken about at considerable length, not only in RFA 13, but also in a miscellaneous archive show entitled "Is Duke a Spook?" There are strong indications that Duke may be a U.S. intelligence agent, more than likely CIA. And David Duke has reinvented himself, and he is once again espousing a sort of new touchy-feely racism that isn't racism and fascism that isn't fascism. That's discussed in, among other publications, the San Francisco Chronicle of Saturday, January 22nd of the year 2000. This is an AP story, Dateline Washington headline, "Duke Forms Rights Group for Whites." Subtitled, "He Warns They'll Soon Be Outnumbered and Outvoted." Former Ku Klux Klansman David Duke started a civil rights group for whites yesterday, saying they face, quote, "massive discrimination," unquote, from the nation's growing population of minorities. Again quoting, "European Americans must band together as a group the same way African Americans do, the same way other minorities do," unquote, Duke told reporters at the National Press Club. He announced formation of the National Organization for European American Rights. Skipping down, "European Americans face a situation where," actually, let me read this one paragraph here. "About 75 organizers of the new group, which will be based in Mandeville, Louisiana, plan to meet today in Philadelphia," and Duke said that there are already member representatives in 30 states. Quote, "European Americans face a situation where we're going to be outnumbered and outvoted in our own country," unquote, said Duke, who is chairman of the Republican Party in Louisiana's St. Tammany Parish. This should be contrasted and compared, really, with the new face of European fascism, which presents a anti-immigrant and xenophobic stance as its basic plank. We talked about that in For the Record Program 196, an update on Eurofascism. In addition to David Duke's new rights organization for that oppressed group, European Americans, another example of profound historical revisionism, and something that has drawn the support of the mainstream Republican presidential candidates, as we'll see in just a minute, is the neo-Confederate movement. This has crystallized in recent years and has received most of its publicity in connection with the struggle over the South Carolina flying of the Confederate flag over its state house. We're going to turn now to the Searchlight magazine's issue of February of the year 2000. That's Searchlight issue number 296. Searchlight can be reached at 37B as in Boy, New Cavendish Street, London, WC1M8JR. That's William Charlie 1 Mary 8 Jolly Roger. And you can visit their website at www.s-light.demon.co.uk. You can also email them at editors@slight.demon.co.uk. This is an article from the Searchlight February 2000 issue. It's by Leonard Ziskin, of the Institute for Research on Education and Human Rights. It's headline, Neo-Confederates Fight NAACP Boycott. And this is about the January rally in Columbia, South Carolina, and also about not only the brouhaha over the flying of the Confederate flag, but also about what is frankly a neo-Confederate movement. Skipping down in this article, we read, speaking of the rally to support the Confederate flag on January 8th in Columbia, South Carolina, that Saturday, a sign saying heritage not hate motivated the marchers, but the vitriol flowed like bile undigested after 135 years. From the platform, one state senator called the NAACP the National Association of Retarded People. Another elected representative screamed, quote, "If they keep trying to bring it down, they're going to find out why they call it a battle flag," unquote. Skipping down, while Confederates publicly crusade with slogans about heritage and respect for the dead, a more insidious sub rosa campaign is taking root underneath the flag waving. A bevy of white supremacist and neo-secessionist groups are configuring a new white Southern nationalism. Here, the organizations are only slightly familiar to longtime Searchlight readers. The Council of Conservative Citizens, Heritage Protection Association, Southern Party, and League of the South. I would note that the Council of Conservative Citizens has strong links to white supremacists, Klansmen, etc., sort of a reincarnation of the white citizen councils of the 1940s, 50s, and early 60s. I would also note the organization, the League of the South here. The League of the South is an organization that was one of the main organizations behind the rally that took place in the Columbia, South Carolina, on the State House Capitol steps. And the League of the South, after visiting their website at dixienet.org, appears to be grouped to a large extent around something called the MNK Foundation, or Mary Noel Kershaw Foundation. That would appear to be, if not the core element of the League of the South, certainly one of the core elements of the League of the South. And that was founded by a Nashville attorney named Jack Kershaw, who was one of James Earl Ray's attorneys. It was Jack Kershaw who was the vehicle for the approach of author William Bradford Huey to James Earl Ray just prior to the House Select Committee on Assassinations investigation in 1976. William Bradford Huey, who was instrumental in coaxing James Earl Ray to plead guilty in exchange for the profits to a book as discussed in RFA 8 and also in For the Record Program 191 recorded on the Martin Luther King holiday weekend of the year 2000. William Bradford Huey also approached James Earl Ray prior to the House Select Committee on Assassinations, attempting to get Ray to plead guilty in exchange for money and a pardon and a new identity. The fellow who was the initial vehicle for this approach to James Earl Ray by William Bradford Huey was Jack Kershaw, who appears to have been the founder of what appears to be the central element of the League of the South, the main organization behind the Columbia, South Carolina rally. The information about Jack Kershaw and his role as the vehicle for William Bradford Huey's approach comes from the book Orders to Kill, subtitled The Truth Behind the Murder of Martin Luther King. It's authored by William F. Pepper, published in hardcover by Carolyn Graff, copyright 1995. And reprising some of the information from For the Record Program 191. Now note here the role of Jack Kershaw, who was one of the driving forces behind the League of the South, and the MNK Foundation, founded by Jack Kershaw, appears to be, again, if not the core element, one of the core elements of the League of the South. James's former attorney, Jack Kershaw, confirmed Jerry Ray's story about the offer made to him by William Bradford Huey in a meeting in Nashville. An offer was $220,000, as well as pardons from Missouri and Tennessee, in exchange for James's admissions that he was the killer. Jack told me that he took the offer to James, who dismissed it out of hand. Later, as we have seen, Huey came back again with the offer but would go through Jerry. Kershaw believed that the two other men present at the meeting might well have been federal agents. He had no doubt that Huey was acting as an intermediary for the federal government, since he reasoned that only the government could arrange the pardons and the protection. I recalled that Huey had previously developed a close working relationship with the FBI, and later, Jack Kershaw was replaced by James Earl Ray as his attorney, in all likelihood because he had been the vehicle for this approach. And again, Jack Kershaw's MNK Foundation appears to be the central element of the League of the South, the main organization behind this rally on the Columbia, South Carolina steps to protest the NAACP's boycott of South Carolina for flying that flag. As Leonard Ziskin points out in this article, behind this rally are some very familiar names, white supremacists and fascists of long standing, also people who overlapped the milieu of Holocaust denial that we looked at earlier. We looked at Syria's official denial of the Holocaust and their referencing of Holocaust revisionist David Irving. The Holocaust denial movement overlaps some of the people behind the Keep the Confederate Flag Flying movement, really a neo-Confederate or neo-secessionist movement, are people who overlap the Holocaust denial movement. Returning once again to the Searchlights issue of February of the year 2000, we read, "Digging deeper, however, some of the same old names show up directing traffic in Columbia. They include A.J. Barker, the smarmy salesman who chaired the Populist Party, and then Ed Field's America First outfit, and attorney Kirk Lyons. Now, Lyons calls himself the Southern Legal Resource Center and promotes the flag. Before, he defended Louis Beam of Leaderless Resistance fame from sedition charges and marshaled skinheads for the Aryan Nations." We're going to take a look at some of these people and elements. Ed Fields, first of all, is a former Ku Klux Klan leader associated with David Duke, who we just looked at forming this new European Americans civil rights organization. The Populist Party is an organization that was basically put together to a large extent by the Liberty Lobby, one of whose offshoots was the Institute for Historical Review, the organization that is the leading Holocaust denial organization. For information about the Populist Party, on whose ticket David Duke ran in 1988, we're going to turn to the very important recent book, The Beast Reawakens, by Martin A. Lee, published in hardcover by Little Brown Books, copyright 1997. That book, happily, is now out in paperback as well, and it gets the Dave Emery 5-star rating. Talking about not only David Duke, but also the Populist Party, of which A.J. Barker was an exponent, A.J. Barker, one of the people behind this rally on the Columbia, South Carolina steps, Martin A. Lee writes as follows. "Putting the right package together was exactly what Duke had in mind when he followed the, quote, tripartisan, unquote, electoral strategy recommended by the Spotlight, which entailed working inside both major parties as well as supporting an independent third party, whatever seemed most opportune. Beginning as a Democrat in the Southern primaries, Duke ran for president in 1988. Quickly shifting gears, he became the presidential candidate for the far-right Populist Party, another Cartoid creation." That refers to Willis Carto, the founder of the Liberty Lobby. "Next, Duke campaigned as a Republican in a special election for a seat in the Louisiana state legislature. To raise funds for this bid, he drew upon a national network of donors culled from the Liberty Lobby's extensive mailing list, which Duke rented. His direct mail pitch was crafted by Liberty Lobby staffers, who also provided advice on how to file campaign finance reports. After winning by a slim margin in February of 1989, Duke hired Tricia Katzen, a Liberty Lobby crony and a regular contributor to the Spotlight, as his legislative aide." So again, note the overlaps between the Populist Party, the Liberty Lobby, deeply involved in Holocaust denial, and this Save the Confederate Flag neo-Confederate movement that we're talking about here. Again, a major element of historical revisionism and neo-fascism right here in the United States. One of the people behind the Keep the Confederate Flag Flying movement, as indicated in this article in the Searchlight, was none other than Kirk Lyons, a white supremacist attorney whose name crops up in the background of both the Oklahoma City bombing investigations and also the O.J. Simpson case as well. Turning once again to the book The Beast Reawakens, we're going to take a look at Kirk Lyons, an individual with, as I like to say, more connections than a switchboard. And again, note the overlap with the Aryan Nations and elements of the Holocaust denial movement as well. In 1988, 13 white supremacists, including Miles and Reverend Butler, were prosecuted for conspiring to overthrow the U.S. government. Federal authorities argued that the defendants had hatched their sinister plans while meeting at the Aryan Nations headquarters 5 years earlier. Miles, Butler, and a third defendant, Lewis Beam Jr., were pegged as the subversive ringleaders, the hardest of the hardcore, who secretly directed the Silent Brotherhood. Following their command, members of the order murdered several people and stole more than $4 million, according to U.S. officials, who suspected that most of the missing cash ended up in the coffers of American neo-Nazi groups. Kirk Lyons, then in his early 30s, represented fellow Texan Lewis Beam at the sedition trial, which was held in Fort Smith, Arkansas. A former helicopter gunner in Vietnam, Beam became the Ku Klux Klan Grand Dragon of the Lone Star State. By the way, I'd also note that Lewis Beam is very close to David Duke as well. Continuing. To avoid arrest on charges related to the order, he fled to Mexico with his wife. A fugitive on the FBI's 10 Most Wanted list, Beam was captured after a gunfight in Guadalajara and returned to the United States. He later served as an ambassador at large for the Aryan Nations. But the federal government failed in its attempt to convict Beam and the other defendants of seditious conspiracy. Lyons and his client celebrated the verdict at a Confederate memorial opposite the courthouse, where Beam proclaimed victory over the enemy. Quote, "I think Zog has suffered a terrible defeat here today. I think everyone saw through the charade and saw that I was simply being punished for being a vociferous and outspoken opponent of Zog," unquote. Zog is what the Aryan Nations refer to as the Zionist occupation government, the presumption being that the United States is under the control of an international Jewish conspiracy. Continuing. The Fort Smith sedition trial marked Lyons' debut as a lawyer for the white supremacist movement. He became something of a celebrity among ultra-rightists for his successful defense of Beam, who by all accounts was one of the key players in America's neo-Nazi underground. In addition to his role as the movement's premier military strategist, a techno-savvy Beam created the first computer bulletin boards for the Aryan Nations and several other Christian identity groups. Kirk Lyons would remain one of his closest collaborators. When Lyons got married at Hayden Lake, Beam was his best man. An activist attorney who sympathized with the views of his clients, Lyons defended several Aryan Nations members charged with felonies ranging from weapons violations to murder. He also coordinated the legal appeal of white Aryan resistance leader Tom Metzger after he was found liable for the skinhead killing of an Ethiopian immigrant in Portland. Another beneficiary of Lyons' legal counsel was Fred Luchter, a Boston-based supplier and installer of electric chairs, lethal injection devices, and other execution equipment. Dubbed Dr. Death, unquote, by ABC News, Luchter ran afoul of the law by practicing engineering without a license. Still, he managed to make a name for himself when he traveled to Auschwitz as a self-proclaimed engineering expert, took a few soil samples, and concluded that the gas chambers were a myth. The so-called Luchter Report was the product of a $37,000, quote, study, unquote, funded by German-Canadian Ernst Zundel. The Institute for Historical Review, again, that's the Liberty Lobby organization, the Institute for Historical Review quickly embraced Luchter's scientific findings, unquote, which were also hailed by Major General Otto Ernst Rehmer and other diehard Holocaust deniers. Luchter and Lyons attended an IHR conference in Southern California in October of 1992, in which they met some of the leading lights of the negationist circuit, including Bela Ewald Altons, by the way. Rehmer was an SS officer who helped to execute the people who tried to kill Hitler on July 20th of 1944, and Bela Ewald Altons as a key German neo-Nazi leader. Continuing, quoting Altons here, Lee writes, or actually quoting Lyons, Lee writes, quote, "I enjoyed the IHR conference," unquote, Lyons recounted, again quoting, "It was mainly a lot of old men with interesting views on World War II. I support all forms of revisionism. When the World War II veterans are gone, I think revisionism will come into its own," unquote. Alton subsequently arranged a fundraising tour for Lyons and Luchter in Germany. Security was provided by one of Bernd Schmidt's martial arts-trained strong-arm squads. Schmidt was both a neo-Nazi and a secret police snitch, but he did not arouse the suspicion of Lyons during the 10-city sojourn. Instead, Lyons came to harbor serious doubts about Alton's. Lyons got angry when he discovered that his young German host was pocketing most of the cash that should have gone to Luchter's defense team. During a previous trip to the fatherland, Lyons had befriended a man who was in many ways his German counterpart, Jürgen Rieger. Described by Die Zeit as, quote, "a neo-Nazi in lawyer's robes," unquote, Rieger headed a group called the Society for Biological Anthropology, Eugenics, and Behavioral Research, which was based in Hamburg. In this capacity, Rieger edited Neue Anthropologie, a pseudo-scientific journal for intellectual racists who believed in Aryan supremacy. At the same time, Rieger served as defense counsel for Michael Kunin, Christian Vork, Ernst Zundel, and several other key neo-Nazis. Widely respected within the neo-Nazi scene, Rieger had connections to all factions of the extreme right in Germany. So note again not only the overlap between the Confederate flag, Save the Flag movement and the Holocaust denial movement, but note the white supremacists and outright fascists behind it, and some of their links with the German fascists and German neo-Nazis as well. As I've noted in the past, the Republican Party's reactionaries are portrayed as somehow respectable, and there is a false discontinuity that is placed between the mainstream Republicans and activists on the extreme right fascist fringe. I've noted in the past the Republican Ethnic Outreach Council, literally an outgrowth of the Third Reich and a key element of the Republican Party, that discussed in numerous broadcasts available from Spitfire. I would note that in the 2000 Republican presidential primary campaign, both George W. Bush and John McCain have endorsed keeping the Confederate flag flying over South Carolina, claiming that it's not a racist symbol. Again, take a look at the people behind this Keep the Confederate Flag Flying. It's really not so much the press has portrayed this as all about the Confederate flag. It really is a neo-secessionist and neo-Confederate movement. We should get perhaps time. We hopefully will have time to talk about that in future broadcasts because we're running low in this program. But for the purposes of the present program, note A, the continuity between these outright fascists and white supremacists behind the Keep the Confederate Flag Flying movement and the two Republican frontrunners. That discussed in an op-ed column in the New York Times of Thursday, February 10th of the year 2000. This is authored by Bob Herbert. It's entitled Looking for Votes in All the Wrong Places and reads in part as follows, skipping down. George W. Bush and John McCain have planted themselves on the wrong side of the Confederate flag issue. And last week, there was Mr. Bush in Greenville, South Carolina, happily touting, quote, our ideas, Republican ideas, conservative ideas, unquote, at Bob Jones University, which maintains its perverse rules against the mingling of races and its disgusting hostility to the Catholic religion. Skipping down. Defenders of the Confederate battle flag like to characterize it as a cherished symbol of a benevolent and oh-so-civilized Southern past, rather than a banner representing the twin abominations of slavery and race hatred. They might want to take a look at the Texas Ordinance of Secession, dated February 2, 1861. The ordinance declares that Texas was received into the Confederated States, quote, as a commonwealth holding, maintaining, and protecting the institution known as Negro slavery, the servitude of the African to the white race within her limits, a relation that had existed from the first white settlement of her wilderness by the white race, and which her people intended should exist in all future time, unquote. The ordinance said Texas, quote, institutions and geographical position established the strongest ties between her and other slaveholding states of the Confederacy, unquote. Then Herbert goes on to write, benign, civilized. Again, the notion that this Confederate flag, keep the Confederate flag flying movement, really a neo-Confederate or neo-secessionist movement, is not about racism, is simply, once again, historical revisionism, and note the overlap between those revisionists and the Holocaust denial people. I've alluded to tapes that deal with some of the other elements that I've talked about on this program. Those are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email spitfire@ix.netcom.com. Visit the Spitfire website for a list and description of the various programs available from Spitfire at spitfirelist.com. A matching description on the KFJC website at kfjc.org. That concludes this segment. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.